Welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. My name is Scott Linden. I'm your host. Also the host of Wing Shooting USA, the TV show. Hope you're watching that on a regular basis. This time of year, it's on about 200 local TV stations and YouTube and Pursuit Up. And soon to be on Amazon Prime Video as well. We got a great show in store for you. One of the most important topics we've discussed since this new podcast got started. Mentoring, helping others join our community, become new hunters, and the reasons why. Looking forward to your phone calls on that. I'll share a little bit of my own observations on that. We'll also have a public access tip and some hunting strategy and dog handling advice. It's all right here on the Upland Nation, the podcast that promises not to insult your intelligence or waste your time while providing you with actionable information. I'm so glad you could join me right here. First off, a quick thank you, a shout out to my friends in Kansas. As some of you know, I'm there pretty much every year for one or more things. This year we went out to shoot some television shows on some of the walk-in hunting access land that the state makes available. Your state probably has a program like that as well. If it doesn't, start calling your elected officials and get one in place. In Kansas, they got 1 million acres, and we explored probably half of that. It felt like my feet are still sore. Had a great time in the communities of Osborne, Dodge City, and Jetmore. I'll tell you more about that later on in the show. They will be part of our This Land Is Your Land feature as well. So thank you again, everybody out in those communities. Thank you to the state of Kansas and particularly their Department of Wildlife, Parks, and Tourism for making it all happen. I hope you can get out there sometime and take a look at some of that. We had pretty good luck. Flick, my young dog, and some other young dogs, and one really old dog. By the way, the bird numbers are pretty strong. We didn't shoot a lot of pheasants, but we sure saw a lot of pheasants. The bobwhite population seems to be pretty darn strong out west, and particularly southwest Kansas. And, of course, knockwood. The weather was perfect. We have dodged all the bad weather this year in South Dakota and in Kansas. And just about when I needed it, driving home with probably the dirtiest truck I've had in a long while, the snow and rain washed most of it off. All right. Well, let's get on to it. We'll be talking about mentoring and who did what for whom in just a moment. But first, take a look at sageandbreaker.com. This time of year, if you're looking for gifts for your friends or for yourself, sageandbreaker.com has a large supply of heirloom gun care and gun cleaning products. I use them every time I break a gun out, or when I break a gun, which doesn't happen very often anymore. Get on their mailing list at sageandbreaker.com and you'll get clued into all the new products before everybody else. Sageandbreaker.com and ESPAmerica.com. Remember, hearing loss is cumulative. If you want to stem that problem, nip it in the bud, so to speak, take a look at ESPAmerica.com and the variety of electronic hearing protection devices that they have for you. I use them on the range and in the field. Okay, so who helped you when you were bitten by the bird hunting bug? Or maybe you didn't even know you were bitten and they brought you along, slowly, subtly, whatever. Could be a parent, it usually is. Might be a neighbor, you've heard that story already. Co-worker, maybe it was your scoutmaster. I have a lot of folks like that to thank, particularly for just awakening me to the outdoors. Thank you, Scoutmaster Jim Wells. Thank you, neighbor Bill Rice, among others. But without a mentor of some sort, even if it's a short-term relationship, we're all in trouble. The reason is the fewer hunters there are, the fewer dollars there are to manage habitat, wildlife, and conservation as a whole. Yeah, it's a matter of dollars and cents. Guns and ammo, bows and arrows, are the biggest funding sources for conservation. How does that work? Well, I'm going to save that long version of the story for later, but for right now, know this. There's an excise tax on guns and ammo, handguns and long guns both. And we pay that, although it's hidden in the price you pay at retail. The manufacturers are paying that price when they sell to the distributor. The distributor carries that along and adds it to the price when you buy it from retail. All that money filters back to the feds, and then the feds dole it out to all the states. 70 to 80% of your department's, your wildlife department's budget comes from that excise tax. It's usually known by the Pittman-Robertson Act moniker, which is the two legislators that sponsored the bill way back in the day. I think in the 30s, but I'll share that in a later podcast. All right, another reason, the money is dwindling. Since I started hunting in the early 1990s, hunter numbers have plummeted 50%. Again, fewer hunters, fewer purchases of guns and ammo, fewer dollars for your wildlife agency. It all trickles down to that. You want more habitat? You want more walk-in hunting areas? You want more game and fish? Buy more stuff and get other people to buy it too. I prefer getting other people to buy it too. All right, enough of that sappy stuff. It's time to talk to you about mentoring and why you're doing it and who's doing it for you or who you're doing it to. Let's go to the phones. So our first caller is from the Denver area. Stephen, good to have you on the line. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Glad to do it. We met at the Cabela's in Mitchell a while back. Loved your puppy. And yep. We have a mutual friend in Todd Ferris, a puppy breeder of Epagnol Bretons, is I think how I'm supposed to be saying that. You tell me.
I don't know. I think you just put a whole bunch of marbles in your mouth and try to say it. That's how it works out.
And because it's French, you do that with attitude, of course.
Yeah, and she's definitely got the French attitude.
Well, good for you, and good luck with her, too. You know, as you well know, we're talking about the people who helped you come into our community of bird hunters, and I'm sure you have more than one, but you want to particularly talk about somebody who was inspirational and motivational to you. So tell me your story.
Yeah, so my wife and I moved out to the Denver area late in 2016. And it got to be about this time in 2017, and we were thinking about Thanksgiving plans. And my uncle has always been going to South Dakota to hunt pheasant. And South Dakota turns out not to be that far away from, you know, it's a 9-hour drive, which was the closest family we had. And I reached out to him and asked if I could join him and go hunting with him. And he was very encouraging. And he invited me along, invited us up there, and we've been going. We went last year, we went again this year, and he's really been great. He taught me how to hunt. He taught me how to clean birds. He's teaching me how to train my new puppy, and he's really been very helpful and really kind of opened this whole world up to me.
Well, you're a lot like me. You got started late in life. I've already shared the story, so I won't bore you with it again, but. But tell me how, you know, what was his reaction when a grown man said, "Hey, I want to do something like hunting." Was he surprised?
No, not at all. You know, I first time I went hunting, I was 38, 2 years ago. And so when I called him up and asked him about it, he was excited to have me along. I think he was looking forward to kind of sharing his knowledge and passing that information down. And so I think he was over the moon about it.
Can you suggest to others who may be on the receiving end of a request like that, how they should handle it? I mean, are there things that he did that others might want to do too?
I think the biggest thing is just being open to questions and being willing to kind of put in the time to help. You know, the first time he showed me how to clean a bird, he went through it step by step, and he was very patient with me and kind of showed me exactly what to do and really kind of made the whole experience a lot of fun. And also he kind of let me explore how things work with me. The very first time we went out hunting, he had the dog and we were working through a slough, and he was just letting his dog work, and he kind of let the dog work out in front of me and let me kind of learn how to read the dog, how to pay attention. And afterwards he'd tell me kind of what he saw and what he thought was would be helpful moving forward. And so I think it's just kind of being involved and being there to answer the questions and just kind of showing people how to do it, but let them kind of learn on their own as well.
Sounds like, though, there's a lot of, I'll call it proactivity on the part of your uncle, and possibly that's something to think about if we're going to mentor somebody, is maybe talk a little bit more than we might if we're just out with a good friend who already knows the rules of the game. Does that sum it up a little bit?
Yeah. You know, he talked, the biggest thing that he, and you've talked about this a lot, is safety. And, you know, muzzle awareness and dog awareness and where everybody else is. You know, when you're moving through some of these sloughs and some of these corn fields and you're trying to stay in line and knowing where everybody else is hunting, and as you get those bigger groups and recognizing that some people, you want them to be safe, they may not be as safe as you would be. And so kind of being aware of that and being the more cautious person. And so those types of things, you know, always being there for that advice and remembering their experiences and where they may have messed up and passing that stuff down.
Good point. Safety first. Going again soon?
Yeah, actually, I'm leaving Sunday for Kansas.
Okay, well, good luck. I just got back, and you'll find lots of birds. I hope the weather cooperates with you. We got lucky, and I'm knocking on wood as I say it.
So, yeah, it looks like right now it's going to be around 50 degrees during the day and maybe a little rainy towards the end of the day. But I think we'll get a pretty good full day and hunt on Monday.
All right. Well, be safe out there. Glad to talk with you. Thanks a lot. And thanks for being part of the Upland Nation podcast.
Thank you so much.
And now from the Facebook page, Mike Riddell says, my grandpa started me duck hunting on a private club when I was 10. Well, you are lucky, Mike. You had somebody to help out in that regard. My father or anyone else in my family hunts, he says. I hope my grandpa is looking down to see me keep the hunting experience alive and well. Man, oh man, if that's not inspiration, I don't know what is. Way to go, Mike, and hope to see you in the field sometime. And our next caller is Eric. Hey, Eric, we've talked a little bit on Facebook over the last few years, I think, now. To think about it. And you've got a kind of a different approach. When you said you'd be glad to be on the podcast, you said, tell how my son and I got started with his great grandpa. Now, that is a convoluted way to say you're both learning from the same person. It's an intergenerational thing. Tell me more.
So my wife's great grandpa, he's in his early 80s and he has been hunting for many, many years. Always pheasants have always been his bird of choice, his hunt of choice. And he had two daughters. Neither one of them took up the sport of pheasant hunting. And then his grandkids, he did not have any grandkids that kind of clinged on to the hobby that he had of pheasant hunting. And then came along myself and then my son, and just being around him, heard all of his wonderful stories over the years of pheasant hunting, and kind of piqued our interest and got us excited. And when my son was around 10 years old, we found a couple youth hunts that some of the local chapters were putting on and went out and gave it a shot. And my son just fell in love with it. And got to talking to his grandpa one time and said, Grandpa, he says, I want to learn more about this pheasant hunt. I want to get more involved with you. And Ronnie took him out pheasant hunting over at Cherry Bend and took him out, had a single shot Rossi 410 was the first gun that he used, and took him out that day. And my son dropped the first two birds that got kicked up, and his grandpa knew right away that he probably had that kid hooked for the rest of his life. And the more my son got into it, he drug me into it as well, because I was never into pheasant hunting in my younger years. And I just grew to love it, watching the dogs, watching people interact with each other. And 6 years later, we've got our own dog now. We've both been out hunting. Unfortunately, his grandpa is not able to go out hunting with us anymore with his health. He can't walk around anymore. So he has passed the torch to my son and myself, and we just love it and hope I can do the same for somebody down the road one of these days.
Well, you're doing it already if you're taking your son along, period.
Yes, I am.
And that is the interesting part of your story is how he kind of dragged you into it, which is kind
Yes.
of, role reversal in a classic sense. What did
Yes,
he
when
have to do to get you involved?
he asked me, how we could go pheasant hunting, how we could do it ourselves. And I got to search around and realized that a lot of the PF chapters did youth hunts throughout the state. And we went to a couple of those because I wanted to see for myself what it was like and got to experience the joy of that, and just it got me hooked. So it went from my son's great grandpa to him and then to me. So yeah, it kind of skipped around a little bit.
Well, you're in a good position, kind of being bookended by two
Yeah.
generations, if you will, to tell us a little bit about what we should do if we are hunters and we're hoping to mentor or at least get somebody else started a little bit. What are the things we should be watching out for? Should we be listening for? What are the signs that somebody is real interested?
I think if you get a person that just seems to gravitate towards you and start asking questions, that's going to show their interest to the sport, and just being able to explain, the fun that you get to have, the interaction that you get to have with each other. It's a lot different than, say like deer hunting, because deer hunting you got to sit and be quiet and can't really converse and do much with a person. But with pheasant hunting, you're interacting with the dog, you're interacting with the person that's beside you, you're out walking around, and it's just, it can be challenging as well. And it's just, so if you get somebody that's piqued their interest a little bit, they get to talking to you, give them all the information you can and invite them out. And I think the trick is taking them out more than once. I think you got to take them multiple times to really get somebody reeled in on it.
Yeah, as they used to say, the first one's free, and after that, but anyway, that's another story from the 60s. Your son, when he was first going out, by now he's drunk the Kool-Aid and he gets it, but at some point he was a real beginner. Anything in particular? I'm always thinking about things like, well, keep him warm, keep him dry, don't make him get up too early. Anything else along those lines for kids that you might advise us to be mindful of?
Show them that it's fun. I guess just talk to them a lot about it and get them into a scenario where they're going to be able to at least kick up some birds. Like I said, those chapter youth hunts are perfect for something like that, 'cause it gets them right away.
Instant gratification.
Yes,
I mean,
definitely.
they get it in their video games. We got to compete with that.
Yes, we do.
Okay, what about snacks? My favorite
Oh,
subject.
yes, you gotta have some food.
Okay, good. Well, congratulations. What a great multi-generational story. I wish you more and more good luck out there, and I'm sure glad you could join us on the Upland Nation podcast. Thanks a lot, Eric.
Thanks for having me, and good luck this year.
Speaking of multi-generational, got a thank you note from Jennifer Maxwell. Her son, Hunter, came with us and with CZ USA's Dave Miller last year to Kansas, another Kansas trip. Wow, a little colder last year than this year. And we turned that into what she calls a once-in-a-lifetime hunt for her son. We sure had a great time with both him and Lily, who also came along. Yeah, we had a boy and a girl hunter last year for the first time. Paul Hageman on the Facebook page says, "My father showed me the joy of the hunt," and Paul's probably right there in the majority. The latest research I saw was that fathers are probably the most common mentor when it comes to hunting. And then the other scary part is if you haven't hunted by age 11, you probably won't. Again, I'm the exception to the rule. Eric is too, but Paul enjoyed the company of his father in the field. In fact, he says I was his bird dog before I was old enough to hold a shotgun. Yeah, can you relate to that? I bet you can. All right, let's get back to the phones. Mark, are you there with me?
Yes, I am.
Good. All right. Looks like from your note, you've been to you at least it would be out west for a while. How's your hunting season going?
It was very good out west. We were in Nebraska for 2 weeks with 9 of us, all Western New York NAVDA members, and we go out there for 2 weeks and got a chance to run our dogs on wild birds. And shot, I don't know, 5-6 different species while we're out there. So it was a good time.
Nice. Very nice. In fact, speaking of different species, I just come back from Kansas, where actually I saw a couple prairie chickens fly across the road. We weren't in a county where you could chase them, but I was encouraged by that. I would imagine they were among the birds you were chasing over there as well.
Yep, I was very lucky. I harvested one over my 4.5-month-old GSP pup. And we did see probably 10 or 15 of them a week fly over. They're very on their low numbers this year there.
Mm-hmm.
But they fly over, and, I mean, they're you'd almost think you were duck hunting the way they fly over the field, so...
Well, that's the way to hunt them in a lot of places, at least according to the so-called experts. We're not here to talk about your trip as much as we're here to talk about the whole idea of who got you started in the world of bird hunting. Now you're deep into it. If you're a NAVDA member and you're going all the way to Nebraska for hunts, tell me your origin story.
Well, I'd have to say, started probably about 5 years ago when my wife and I decided we needed to get a dog. I always fell in love with German Shorthair Pointers, and just kind of a dog that really intrigued me on their intelligence and stuff. And I looked around, and the only one I could find at the time was a breeder downstate in New York. And we went and picked up our pup. And got involved with NAVDA, and it's pretty much been a downhill since then. Now I'm working on my apprenticeship for judging, and we just got our second pup here, so that's about it. Now we just get to travel and enjoy hunting.
I joke about my dog being my mentor because, you know, when I got started in this world, I was an adult like you. Still don't act like one, but that's another story. But and maybe you either. So I paid close attention to the dog because I didn't have a lot of people around me who would help me in that regard. It came eventually, but were there people in your life that that have helped you a lot? If you're a member of NAVDA, I would imagine that's where it starts.
Yeah, I would have to say. Our chapter here, Finger Lakes chapter, we're actually the second oldest chapter of the NAVDA system. I think we started in 1974 or 78. And we have a couple old-time members here, and one of them being Al Burkhart. He's kind of our mentor in the chapter. He's a very good trainer and helps us all along. He's been, I think, involved since the 70s with German Shorthair Pointers and other breeds. So it's, I think our chapter has a lot to do with him, and I think he keeps us going down the right path with how we should be training. So,
well, tell me a little bit about the things that you, as an adult in particular, as a late adopter, I'll call it, and we share that. So, hey, I'm with you. What are the things that you needed the most help with when you became involved in bird hunting and bird dogs?
I actually don't even know where to start with that question. When I first got my pup, I watched some videos online and thought this could be the easiest thing in the world. And my wife and I showed up at our first NABDA training day, and we walked away and go, what did we just get ourselves into?
I'm laughing with you, not at you. Someday I'll tell you about my first natural ability test.
So yeah, you'll agree on that one. But it was we walked away from that training day, and after everything we watched and read and stuff, we knew nothing. I got to watch some very, very good dogs, you know, VC dogs and Prize One and Master Hunter dogs on just one training day, and thought to myself, where do I even start? So that was, there was a lot of encouragement, because that's the type of person I am, is when you see those finished dogs, you think to yourself, how can I get there? And that's one thing I think with our chapter that we do is we make sure that all members, you know, the ones that put forth the effort, especially, they can get there with their dogs. And that's what you want to see is finished dog work. I see a lot of the shows, you know, your show especially, and other ones that you like hunting over those finished dogs. So that was the big encouragement, I think.
Well, it sounds like you're on the right path, and it sounds like maybe the next step for you is mentoring somebody else. Have you thought about that at all?
Yep. I actually, last year, because I had to put my my three-year-old down due to the foreign body infection she ended up getting, I took a year, a whole summer actually, of what do I call mentoring or helping out quite a few of the new individuals in our chapter with puppies and stuff, and getting them on that right road of, you know, where they need to be and what they should work on as far as, especially coming up in the upcoming hunting season. So.
Well, good on you for that. I'm sorry to hear about your three-year-old. We lived through that scare and dodged the bullet a couple years back.
Yep.
But yeah, it is something maybe we should talk about on the podcast down the road as well. But Mark, keep up the good work. So glad to hear that you're much like me, kind of a, you know, a latecomer to the game, but embracing it with both arms and maybe both feet as well. Thanks for being on the podcast.
All right. Thank you very much.
We got lots more calls coming up and a little bit more story time. If you're not in the queue yet, you will be. Don't worry. We'll get to every caller we have. Looking forward to talking with all of you about this whole mentoring thing. And hold on for just a moment more, and then we will talk about a lesson I learned yet again in Kansas, but have learned over the last few weeks in several states. First, a brief message from ESPAmerica.com. They are my hearing protection choice. Digital, nano-coated so that they will stay dry when you are sweaty. And as important as almost all of those other attributes, the custom fitting means when you're walking around on rough ground, they'll stay in your ear. You don't have to worry about losing them because they fit so perfectly. You'll probably forget that you have them in, except when you pull the trigger and you're not being slowly deafened. For more information and the choices that you have, go to ESPAmerica.com. Tell them I sent you. All right. Every week I share with you something that I've learned that you may learn faster by hearing how I blew it in our Handle It feature. It's been a couple weeks now, and my memory is fading fast because the dogs did 30 or 35 miles apiece, and me and Ben did about 10 miles that day, but when I finally did get around to shooting a chucker, I went out to look for it because Flick was working another bunch already, and I could not find it. So I stepped back and remembered something I learned again in Kansas on Bob White's. If you shoot a bird and you can't find it immediately, get out of the area, mark it, bring your dog into the area, let him do the work. I don't need to tell you why. They smell better than us. Maybe that's not the right way to put it, especially after a long hunt. They scent birds better than us. And sure enough, if we're in there degrading the quality of the air with human stink, it's going to be a lot harder for them to do that. In Kansas, Flick finally stuck his nose into a little rodent hole of one sort or another. The bobwhite came out, and the chase was on, and the victor was Flick. All because we let him do the work that he is so much more qualified to do than us. Good boy. Good boy. Now let's get back to our mentoring story. You know, there's two ways to look at this whole idea of taking other people hunting, and give me your kind attention for a moment, and I will extemporize on that. There's the glass half empty approach, which I don't buy. If you don't have the time to help other people become better conservationists, then thanks for listening and goodbye. It does require some effort on your part, and some people just aren't willing to do that. There is the risk that somebody that you take somewhere else, for example, is going to share those spots with somebody else, or they're just going to be there when you're there, and that's one more person you care to be around. Or they might trash a place, or they might give away your secret spots, or just it's just too darn hard for you. Well, okay, that's the glass half empty. I think it's fully balanced and then some by a half full glass. Remember what I said about funding conservation. Someday your secret spots will degrade if nobody's out there managing them. How about a new companion in the field? Works for me. And as you parents get older and older, how about somebody who will drive you to those spots and help you along in the field? Now, when I ask you every year in the Upland Index survey what your priorities are in the field, one of the highest priorities is fellowship, camaraderie. Well, there you go. Somebody you take might show you a spot later on. They might know spots that you don't know. They might teach you a thing or two that you didn't think of. Let me give you a couple other slightly more closer to home stories for you. I mentored a group of, younger dog owners over the summer. And one of those dog owners turns out to be a relation to a guy I used to get my training pigeons from who'd fallen off the radar screen. Well, Frank was kind enough to make that connection again after a long, hard effort and simply greased the skids, if you will, and started bringing pigeons to my loft that I wouldn't have found any other way. Thank you again, Frank. And here's the gravy on your mashed potatoes. If you're looking for one more reason to get somebody else started, speaking of that training group, I now have three other hunters I'm living through vicariously. I get hunting reports every week from these guys when they go out, and it's kind of fun to see all of that hard work paying off in their success as well as my own. All right, so enough personal stuff. Now it's your turn again. Let's go back to the phones. And next up on the podcast, the Upland Nation podcast, that is Matt Luck. Matt, you got a mentor story for me?
Well, about 20 years ago, actually, it would be right about this time, was my first experience with hunting upland game. We were hunting pheasant out in Kansas. My brother's wife had taken a job in the emergency room out in Hayes. And so my first experience with him, literally, we're out there around Thanksgiving time, as I spent 4 days just walking the field with him, not even holding a gun, and just kind of learning it from watching and picking their brains as far as what I should be looking for, what the dogs are doing, or, you know, what the birds are going to be doing this time of the day, you know, hunting different fields because the birds will be eating or, you know, on roost or whatever. So that was, you know, the biggest thing is I spent a lot of time just walking. I mean, you know how it is. You were just out there in Kansas. You can walk forever. And that was my learning experience. And then it led to me getting started in hunting. I mean, it wasn't just that. And then eventually it led to deer. But my first experience was, you know, with upland game. And it's a passion and something that I just enjoy doing.
Well, I'm intrigued because I talk a good game about it, but most of the time I let most of our newcomers carry a gun of one sort or another. But I imagine that you learn a whole heck of a lot if you can focus on everything except the actual shooting. And the shooting is intimidating to a lot of people. Do you think that helped you at all?
It absolutely did because I was able to see how they reacted to, you know, the pheasants going up because whether they're farm-raised birds or whether they're wild birds, when that first rooster goes up, it'll startle the, you know, the best of you and getting used to that sound and, you know, watching the dog so that you were at least a little bit more prepared. Definitely laid the groundwork for the next year when we went back out there at Christmas time. Now I was able to spend a lot more time out in the field, and that time I had the gun with me, and it was just a great experience. And then, you know, the mentoring doesn't stop because it's always asking questions, or you know, why is a dog doing this way, or why are we hunting, you know, why are the dogs, you know, in this field allowed to be 50 to 70 meters out in front. And I find out, well, it's because the wind's blowing and they're bringing the birds toward us. It's easier for them to pick up the scent and all of that stuff. So it was, you know, I guess my mentoring never stopped with my brother. It was always, you know, letting me know what's going on and, you know, this is what you should be looking for.
Nice. And how about these days? You see any opportunities for you to be the mentor instead?
Not at this point. My kids are all in their 20s. It's not something that they're interested in. We have gone out and shot clays, and I have to admit, my oldest Carrie is a natural. It is amazing how good her hand and eye coordination is when we've gone and shot at you know, trap, and she doesn't miss. Which is pretty cool, and you know, a lot of things. But the mentoring will be there when everybody's ready to go. But it's we started them off in the fields when they were little. When we would get out to Kansas, it's a 16, 18-hour drive, and so that first day that we got there, because everybody's exhausted. Was to go out. I mean, this sounds crazy, right? Everybody's exhausted. So what do? You go and walk a field. And we were on private land, and so nobody had a gun, and it was just so that the kids could watch how the dogs would work. And it was fantastic because my niece nearly sat on a bird. She was tired, and so my brother stopped all of us and was explaining this is what's going on, and she just kind of squatted down. And literally, as she squatted down, this hen went up from underneath her. I mean, and the kids were all like ecstatic and screaming. You know how little kids are about it. And then they're on the ground laughing because she was so scared. But that was kind of a funny story.
Oh, I love it. And you know what I like most about that is you can't get that adrenaline rush from a video game. You just cannot. You got to be
No.
there. You got to be in the moment outdoors where it's very real. But you also mentioned something that I'd like to just riff on for a minute, and that is the idea that people will come to it in their own time. And as a former junior high school band director, I'll never forget the kids who were forced into being in the band. Gosh dang it, their parents bought them a clarinet and they were going to play the dang thing, whether they wanted to or not. And that's probably the best way to turn somebody off to hunting. It sounds like you've kind of maybe mulled that over a little bit. Have you given thought to the timing, and or are you just staying open should the phone call come?
The invitation's extended whenever I go out. If we're going out to shoot clays or anything like that. It's opened up to the kids if they want to go. They're at a point now in their lives where they've got a thousand things going on. So the timing doesn't always work, but they know that I'm going out, whether it's to go fish or go deer hunt or go pheasant hunt. They know what's going on. So that invitation is there. It's a little bit harder now with my brother's dogs were put down last year. And that was what inspired our last trip out last year to Kansas, was to spread the ashes. And then the Springer Spaniel that I have, he's had better days. He'd rather chase a squirrel than a pheasant.
Yeah, it's not indigenous simply to Springers though. Just remember
Right. So
that.
the invitation's out there for the kids, and they know that, we'll go, because I didn't get introduced to it until I was 32,
Yeah.
is when I started hunting. My dad grew up hunting pheasant when he was a kid, and he would tell stories about that. But my mom was never a hunter, and so my dad always had other things going on, and so he never continued pheasant hunting until Jeff moved out to Hayes.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you took it up. We have a lot more in common than you might think. That's about when I picked up a shotgun for the first time, too. Well,
Well, and I'm a school teacher as well.
oh yeah. Good on you for all of those things and more. And thanks for being part of the Upland Nation podcast.
Thank you so much, Scott. Take care.
And now here's a Facebook comment from one of my hunting buddies, Lydia Ettinger. We met many years ago on our Fur Feathers Friends event, the inaugural version of that. And then Lydia and her husband stop to visit whenever they're at Pheasant Fest. And I encourage you all to do the same thing. Lydia says, "My husband introduced me to upland bird hunting while we were dating." All right, guys, remember that. Single guys, there's still hope. And Lydia goes on to say, 15 years later, we're married with three bird dogs, two kids, and still love to hunt together. Oh, what a story. And the kids are great kids too, by the way. And I'm not surprised. Lydia says her husband's encouragement helped me grow from just wanting to carry a camera to picking up a shotgun and bringing birds down myself. And I have personally witnessed that. Way to go, Lydia. Give all the kids and the dogs a hug for me. Say hello. Thanks a bunch. All right, our next caller is Petey Jaquette. Am I pronouncing that right, or do we say it like the saxophone player?
Jake quit.
Oh, I'm glad I asked. Yeah, I think that's.
It's okay. I've only ever had it pronounced twice, the first time somebody heard it in my life.
One of the guys I mentored many years ago had a very similar last name, and there was a lot of discussion about why it was pronounced that way that I won't get into now. You've got a kind of an interesting perspective on mentoring and how to do it and why to do it, because you do a lot of volunteer work with non-family mentors, you're calling it. So tell me more about all of that.
Well, I grew up in a family that didn't hunt. My father doesn't hunt. I had one grandfather who hunted before I was born, but he had it was a case where he had a great hunting dog, and there was an accident while hunting. The dog got shot, and it completely deflated him, and he never hunted again. And I'm not sure that I ever even knew he hunted pheasants before he passed away. As I got to be about 8, 9 years old, I started to develop an interest in hunting, and we had a family friend who he and his wife had their first date as a double date with my parents. His wife and my mother both moved to the area the same year to become teachers in a school district, and they became friends very quickly, and that's how we met them. And when we go to their house, he had a couple of custom-made flintlock rifles over the mantle, and I was fascinated by them. And he would take them down and let me hold them, and he would talk about them and the guy that had made them, and he would tell stories about going to Colorado to elk hunt and about deer hunting. And when I started to express an interest in hunting, he said, well, you know, get your hunter safety card and you get a license and I'll take you out hunting. We'll go coyote hunting. So I went through about 9 years old and did my first hunter safety class, got my hunting license, and he took me out. And we did some long walks through draws and valleys in western Illinois trying to find coyotes. Never really had much success finding hunting like that, but it was fun, and I was really enjoying it. And then fast forward to about the age of 12, and my mother was working as a legal secretary at a law office in town. And there was an insurance agent in town that came in one day, and they got to chatting about things, and we knew him. And his girlfriend at the time had a son that was in my class in school. So we had a connection there. And my mother told him that I was interested in hunting. And he said, well, would he be interested in going pheasant hunting with me on the day after Thanksgiving? And she said, I suspect he probably would. So the Friday after Thanksgiving of 1994, myself and this gentleman and two other adults and two other young men, we went out and went on a pheasant hunt. And I still remember that day. It was, there's snow on the ground. I can still tell you, I could about walk you to the spot where one of the pheasants got up that I just about stepped on. And all I carried that day was a BB gun. But we had a good day and I was hooked. So, and a few years later, I started meeting some other gentlemen through another hobby of doing living history reenacting, and we talked more about hunting. And so it's been all these different people through my life that were not family members who saw that I had an interest and fostered that and nurtured that interest and gave me the opportunity to do that. And then I went into college and got involved in the Sportsman's Club when I was in college and had more opportunities to hunt there, and it just became a passion of mine. And then now, go ahead.
Well, yeah, we will get to that because you are the poster boy, Petey, and we're going to talk more about what we're going to talk more about. But I can't help but interrupt and talk about people like that I've had in my life, whether it's a baseball coach or a scout master and that sort of thing. But what I'm most intrigued by is what the trigger can be for somebody. And I talk about it a lot. I mentioned recently, I think I wrote something and said, be loud and proud about hunting. Tell people you hunt. Show them what you're doing with these animals once you bring them to bag. Share a meal. Show kids the taxidermy. Now, yeah, some of them might be turned off, but that could be the trigger. For example, it was with a kid we just brought to South Dakota last month. Those guns hanging over the mantle. What an intriguing way to get in to get intrigued. And for you, for you, that was the, pardon the pun, the trigger. But now you're paying it forward in any number of ways. What do you do these days that will help in that regard?
Well, I volunteer a lot of my time. I'm very active in Pheasants Forever. That got started because Pheasants Forever stepped up and basically fulfilled one of my dreams. I drove by this one piece of property about 10 miles from our house every time we went to Peoria, Illinois. And I always looked at it after I got into pheasant hunting. I said, boy, I wish I could buy that ground and turn it into pheasant habitat and make pheasant hunting ground out of it. It's old reclaimed strip mine ground. And I knew there was no way I was ever going to come up with the millions of dollars it was going to take to buy the ground and do the habitat development. And then 2011, Pheasants Forever comes in and buys the ground and says, hey, we're going to make this habitat for pheasants. And I said, well, that's been my dream, so how can I help? So I started to volunteer when I had work days, and then a couple years later got involved as the youth chairman for the committee, and now serve as the youth chairman and the president of our chapter, Pheasants Forever. We try to do several youth events a year. We host pollinator planting events for the youth. We have started hosting a youth and women's wing shooting clinic every year. I got involved with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources youth and women's wing shooting program and actually got certified as an instructor. So I go around to multiple clinics throughout the year and actually teach youth and women how to shoot shotguns at flying targets, which has just been a phenomenal opportunity to do that kind of stuff. And trying to go through and work with that program, and that program has now expanded into actually offering youth wing shooting clinic and pheasant hunt days. So we go out in the morning, we have a wing shooting clinic and teach youth how to shoot shotguns or how to improve their shotgun shooting, have lunch, and then we take them out in the afternoon and we do a pheasant hunt. And it's been a huge blessing in my life. And if I get out no other days of the year, just to go out and do those days to hunt with those youth, I don't even carry a gun. Those are the most rewarding days that I have in the field.
Absolutely, and more power to you. Keep up the good work, Petey, and thanks for being on the Upland Nation podcast. Good job.
Well, thank you for your time, Scott, and keep up the great work. Appreciate what you do and bringing this information to light.
Back to the Facebook page where Mike Sunstedt says his mentor was his granddad. Pat Brown says his mentor was his brother-in-law, Jack. Well, there's a new one on me. But hey, whatever floats his boat. And good on you, Jack, for bringing Pat Brown into the fold as well. All right, let's go to the next call. And this caller is from someplace I was last week, Dodge City, Kansas. Chris Meyer, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you.
I had a great time down there. Thanks, Coach Foster and everybody at the Ford County Sportsman's Club. I got to say a few words in between auction items, and the talk was brief and to the point. Take a kid hunting was the basic message. Chris, you're doing just that. You're relatively new to this world, but tell me a little bit about how you got involved in all of this.
Well, me and my wife weren't able to have children, so we ended up adopting four wonderful kids, and they showed interest in the outdoors, and I've always been an outdoorsman for fishing and just loving the outdoors. So, being a good dad, I wanted to show my kids, that I was interested in what they were. So that's how I got interested in hunting, was through my kids. So we went and took our hunter safety course through the Ford County Sportsman Club, and we started pheasant hunting and just being outside, and we dove hunt and pheasant hunt, and we took our first goose hunt last year.
Well, good on you and all four of the kids. It was good to meet you down there in Dodge, and I'm intrigued. You're the second caller that's basically been dragged into the pheasant fields by a child. Tell me how that worked. I mean, what kind of psychology did they use to get you involved in all of that?
Well, it's just peer pressure, because they kept hinting around they would like to go out and try this, and I wasn't raised by a father that was a hunter, because where we lived when I grew up, there just wasn't that out there. So they said that they would like to do it, so I just wanted to support them and what they were interested in, and it made me love the sport itself. So I'm hooked 100%, and I think my wife wishes that I probably wouldn't have found it, but I think it's a great, great sport for any family.
And as the bumper sticker says, take your kids hunting and you won't have to hunt for your kids.
Yes.
I love it. Well, good on you. And I am sure glad we could meet down there in Dodge. Give everybody at the Ford County Sportsman's Club my best regards. And hope you have the remainder of your season is a good one, Chris. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting geared up to go out in the morning. It snowed a little bit here last night, so we're hoping to get after him. So,
good luck and be safe. Thanks again, Chris.
All right. No, thank you for all you do.
You're welcome. Wow, we have learned a lot today on the podcast. Some of the things that kind of were a surprise to me, how many kids drag parents into the hunting world, if you will. One way or another. The other thing that struck me is how much more common than I thought it was that you don't need to be raised in a hunting family. You don't need to be a hunter your whole life. You can start at any point in your life, and that's important as well for the folks who are looking to help others. Let's not discount the folks who are in their early 30s or their late 40s or anything like that if they express an interest, and that's probably the most important thing I garnered so far from our discussion, and that really is an eye opener, an ear opener in this case for me. And then I'm reminded of something that Ronnie Smith said to me at a seminar a couple of years ago about puppies. Puppies can do no wrong. When it comes to recruiting new hunters, you're the puppy. You can do no wrong. Go out, find somebody, make yourself available. Tell everybody that's what you're hoping to do. As I said earlier, be loud and proud, and eventually someone will seek you out and ask the question. Kind of like the Freemasons, I think. That's how that works. Correct me if I'm wrong. But do be out there. I hope it's been inspiring to you. Everybody else out there who's been on the podcast with me, boy, am I fired up. I can't wait to get back out into the field. And I think the next trip I'm on, I will be bringing, I'm bringing along somebody I introduced to the sport. So there, living, breathing proof. And this portion of the podcast is brought to you by Dogtra and their new TNB dual collar system. First things first, remember that you get 10% off if you use the discount code SLUN10 at checkout. And there's free shipping on anything over $200, including that Dogtra TNB dual. Now, I used that system a lot while I was out in Kansas last week, and two things that I hadn't thought about before that I learned to appreciate beyond the fact that you have two sets of buttons and you don't have to toggle back and forth. One is battery life. You know, I still haven't charged it, and I use it again today at lunch when I was running Flick. And if you use the vibration feature instead of, say, the stimulation feature, and I do that a lot, both on Flick's flank, say that three times fast, and also on his neck, the vibration feature in these Dogtra T&B dual collars is pretty darn serious. It gets the message across without stimulation, which is always a good thing. Dogtra.com is where you get more information. SLUN10 is good for 10% off anything you buy there, including the Dogtra T&B Dual. Tell them I sent you. And you know how I feel about hunting publicly accessible land. It's one of the things I do when I'm not on TV. Well, even when I'm on TV these days. And in fact, here's a perfect example. Out near the town of Jetmore, Kansas, that'd be kind of in smack dab in the middle of the state. Look it up. There's an incredible resource called Horse Thief Reservoir. I love this story for any number of reasons. The first is it was kind of built and funded with a community bake sale. Four of the counties in the area decided they needed a water feature, and they did a great job of it. But beyond all that, one of the things that you are allowed to do out there, besides water ski, fish, camp, hike, watch wildlife, and generally have a great time, is bird hunt. Horse Thief Reservoir is surrounded by incredibly well-managed bird hunting habitat. Josh Hobbs, the manager of the area, does a great job of rotating crops and managing CRP, and it's all part of the Kansas Walk-In Hunting Access Program. It's free to you, free to me. All you need is a license. I'll see you at Horse Thief Reservoir. And a shout out to our friends at Tag Safari. That's TAGLINDEN 15. That discount code will get you 15% off anything. If you're looking for a rugged, outdoorsy look at your next upcoming Pheasants Forever Banquet or the SCI convention or anywhere else, well, Tag Safari is where you're going to find your gear. It's all grown, made, and shipped direct to you in packaging that all comes from Africa. It's broken in for you. It's comfortable. It's the highest quality cotton apparel I've ever found out there. Tag Safari is the name of the company. And Tag Linden 15 will get you 15% off anything that you buy at tagsafari.com. And one more reminder for you, dogtra.com is where you find more information on the TNB dual collar that I love so much for all sorts of reasons. Find out more and use the discount code SLUN10 for 10% off anything you buy there. And don't forget free shipping on anything over $200. Wow, I hope you've learned as much as I have today. Sure appreciate your paying attention. And for all the callers out there, thanks for participating. Couldn't do it without you. Thanks for all the great feedback. I look forward to the next time we talk, whether it's on the phone or in the field. Hey, and those of you out there who are listening, please leave a review and a rating wherever you get your podcast. And by the way, we're now on iHeartRadio as well, the only bird hunting show on iHeartRadio. Tell your friends, share here and there and everywhere else. Look for more information on the Upland Nation and the Wing Shooting USA Facebook pages. You can download all the podcasts at uplandnation.com. If you'd like to talk in between now and our next session, email me at scottlindenoutdoors@gmail.com. Maybe you have a suggestion for a topic or you want to be on the podcast yourself, scottlindenoutdoors@gmail.com. I hope you're having a fantastic season. I hope you're being safe. And you want to make your season even better? Then do what we've been talking about and take a newcomer hunting. Thanks for listening.